Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, episode number 3. Your host is Chad Beckman. Today, he talks with Charlie Langdon, CEO at Vault Data. The topic is an executive view of cyber risk. Now, let's get to it.
Does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
You also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats.
Okay, welcome to our guest today is Charlie Langdon, and we appreciate him having the time to spend with us. Charlie, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chad, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with everybody today.
Yeah. If you wouldn't mind, to set the stage for our listeners, could you give us a little bit of your background and give us some context on your experience?
Sure. So, you know, I started my career with AT&T, where I got a really good understanding of networking. And then left AT&T, went to IBM, and I spent a lot of time with the computing side of communications. And then I was with a company called Genuity, which used to be the old BBN company, later purchased by Level 3. But they were a pretty advanced network security, large NOC organization, and actually had the White House for their security requirements.
Wow, that's impressive. What type of roles did you play with these different organizations?
Yeah, so I moved up through the business fairly quickly. It was on IBM's executive resource program and ended up becoming the president and CEO of NEC Unified Solutions. My background really has been all about digital disruption, going back to the early 80s and the idea that the shift from analog to digital created the markets, the communication and computing markets' first disruptive factors. And so I spent most of my career dealing with spotting disruption and then creating corresponding digital transformation solutions, essentially to keep companies from going into Chapter 11.
And from your experience in those roles and with those companies, I mean, the White House as a customer that you had to manage, that's a pretty incredible experience. Given all those challenges, how did you see information security sort of begin and then transform throughout your career? And now we call it many times cybersecurity, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I think it was probably, you could say, just even 2, at most 3 years ago when the head of IT walked into my door, say, as the CEO at NEC. I was thinking one of 3 things. Either they were there to upgrade my desktop, maybe give me a new cell phone, or they had a need for a budget discussion. You know, and today, if the head of IT comes to my door, I'm pretty sure my company's under attack. So we've had a big change in the way that cybersecurity is thought about and what it can do to a company and how we see and value our IT organizations.
Absolutely. That's a stark contrast over the last 10 years. You're absolutely right. I haven't even thought of it in that context, but that is the case. No CEO wants to see their security leader running through the door and needing to have a conversation quickly.
Chad, no CEO wants to be in an unprepared state. We like to have things thought out. We like to know what we're doing, particularly in a crisis moment. And CEOs deal with crises on a daily basis, some small and some large. And a cyber attack is obviously very large.
Have you ever had to deal with a cyber attack and having to respond to something that may have either led to a breach or a breach was mitigated as a result of controls and the responsiveness of a team?
Yeah, I have seen customers get attacked, certainly through Genuity, and I have seen all kinds of cyber attacks that go from physical attacks where, you know, where a system was locked down, or an attack where malware was placed into a system, where emails have been corrupted. In fact, we've all seen that. We've all seen an email suddenly show up in your inbox, which is clearly someone else's name, but it's spam. So this is something that we all experience.
Mm-hmm. So having been, you know, a CEO and a board member, and now you're starting another company, which is, sounds pretty exciting. We'll get to that in a moment. I'd like to get your perspective based on the chair and the you've been in and the roles you've had is how do you really quantify as a CEO the cyber risk today? And how does that play into the business strategy?
Sure. So the very first thing is that, that any kind of cyber event needs to be seen immediately as a threat to your P&L. Whether you're public or private, it doesn't make a difference. What cyber events do is they stop business, or they take key assets of a business and they release it out into the marketplace where it's no longer protected. So, you know, the first thing that any CEO wants to do is look at cyber responses as a means of protecting shareholder value. The second thing they want to do is they want to look at it as a means of protecting intellectual capital. And the last thing that every CEO thinks about every day is how do I ensure against business disruption? And in this case, digital or cyber disruption. If I'm knocked out for 2 hours and that costs me a couple of $1 million of profit, that's a real problem.
So I'm hearing a lot of value proposition when it comes to cybersecurity and managing the overall risk. What type of data do you as a CEO want to see in order to be able to measure those three aspects you just gave us?
Well, I think that generally speaking, what every CEO needs to do is sit down with their leadership team and identify the things that, and particularly related to their data, the things that are most valuable to them, and ensure that they've got a plan A to protect them, which is sort of the standard course and speed of what cyber consulting firms give companies. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, you have to plan for the fact that you're going to have a failure. You're going to be disrupted. And what do you do when you're disrupted? My recommendation to every CEO is to have a plan that you can immediately put into action, mm-hmm. so that you can respond to the disruption and minimize your company's exposure.
Mm-hmm. And that comes in the form of a data breach playbook, an incident response plan, and obviously a well thought out communications plan with a bunch of different people needing to get involved, clearly, when those plans are dusted off and rolled out on the table.
Absolutely, Chad. You know, from my viewpoint, the first thing is that there are the what, who, why, and hows that need to be considered. And there are eight keys that every CEO should have at their fingertips, spread out through their executive team, and should have a SWAT team in place. And I think we should come back and talk about the SWAT team. But the first thing is you're right. You need to have a plan. You need to have a predetermined plan. And that plan needs to be able to determine instantly the issues at hand. It needs to determine the intent of the issue. This is a very important point because sometimes a hack will be a requirement for ransom money. And sometimes there is no reason that one can spot why the hack was. If we take a look at Equifax as an example, people today still aren't sure why that hack occurred. They know it occurred, but they don't know why. Mm-hmm. So you need to determine intent. And then the next thing you need to do is you need to respond. You need to respond internally and externally. You need to communicate to the right people. This would include customers because you may have exposed their data. This includes your supply chain because you may be holding up somebody that's dependent on your widgets, so to speak, or the other way around. You need to understand how you're going to reassure the marketplace. Having your hand on the tiller of a corporation is a really important thing for a CEO to demonstrate. And when we come under attack, we need to be able to show the market at large that we've got control of this thing. And then last thing, you need to be able to, as a CEO, you need to be able to demonstrate your precise leadership. So those are the eight keys.
Ben, thank you for sharing that. Now let's circle back to your SWAT team. What does a SWAT team look like? Is it an internal team? Is it an external team? Is it a hybrid approach?
So immediately it's an internal team and then it triages out. The first thing you want on that team, obviously, is you want your head of IT and you want your head of cybersecurity. If you have a cyber person, if you have a chief security officer, that person needs to be on your team. And by the way, I recommend taking those people, whether they be one or two separate people, I recommend them being in the direct chain of command report to the CEO. I think in today's world, given the crisis that a cyber hack creates, I think that they need to have the same level of responsibility and directability from a CEO as the CFO does.
And what type of people, what are their roles maybe for our audience might be in those positions?
Well, certainly people that are trained in security itself. And security is as broad as it is deep. It ranges from network security to software security to data security to third-party security relationships. It also handles internal security, mm-hmm. things like people walking out with intellectual capital and having systems and software monitoring systems in place to know when someone has downloaded something or gone or logged in from an unsecure site and addressed secure information. Mm-hmm. You need to know when someone is traveling if they are in a secure zone. Or, for example, do you want your chief marketing officer to be sitting in China, addressing your intellectual capital? There are certain hotels in this world when one does not just bring their laptop there and load up and dial into your office. Fully integrated into your systems.
I'm glad you brought that point up. Are you a fan of having the chief information security officer report directly to the CEO?
I absolutely am. I think it's a critical flaw if you don't. The first time that you experience a halt in business or a theft of your intellectual capital, you're, as a CEO, are going to wish that you really had that direct relationship.
And that's part of what you said earlier with your analogy, having the hand on the tiller at all times. And so, what kind of information do you, as a CEO, need to be receiving to understand what direction to sort of turn the tiller, if you will?
Right. So that brings us back to the SWAT team. So obviously we want the head of security, the head of IT, the CIO on the SWAT team. And in some companies that may be one person, in some companies that may be three people. And it just depends on the size and the breadth of the company. But either way, they need to be on the SWAT team. The next person you need on the SWAT team is your CFO. You need to have an immediate understanding of what the financial impact of a breach is. And quite frankly, I highly recommend that every company have an insurance policy for a cyber attack, so that if it's a ransom-based attack, you have immediate access to money that you can pay for the ransom. And look, we don't like paying thieves, but if I'm losing a couple of million dollars an hour, a minute, a day, then I need to make this ransom payment so that I can get my business back online and deal with the outcome of that later. But so then you're going to want your head of sales on your SWAT team, because you need to be calling key customers and let them know firsthand what happened. You don't want them seeing it on the news or hearing about it from mm-hmm. another customer or another or a competitor of yours. Mm-hmm. So you've got your IT team, you've got your CFO, you've got your head of sales. I also recommend having the head of marketing. And the reason being is that you need to talk to the marketplace pretty quickly. You need to be able to demonstrate externally that you've got the hand on the tiller.
Now, a word from our sponsor, TrustMap, the business management system for security leaders. TrustMap has been described as a solution in a couple of different ways. For example, it has been described as a GRC platform, and it's also been described as a business management platform for security teams. You see, TrustMap is designed for security teams by security teams. The genesis of TrustMap began when a CIO asked the question, "Show me the state of our security program. Where are we today and where are we going over the next 2 to 3 years? And how much is it going to take to get there?" One example of TrustMap solving real-world challenges begins with a customer in the insurance services industry that I'll refer to as David. David, like many other security program managers, struggled to coordinate all of the activities across various teams to determine the security program performance and also set priorities to improve security and manage risk over the next calendar year. Now, we'll pause there. We'll come back a little later in the podcast to learn the outcome of David's challenge using TrustMap. For now, listeners of the podcast should know that you can schedule a free trial of TrustMap. Go to trustmap.com/business. Now, let's pick up where we left off.
What kind of metrics do you need to understand, let's say, prior to a breach, right? Breach has not occurred, but you want to make sure that your hand is on the tiller or your thumb is on the pulse, whatever analogy we want to use here. What is it that you need to see on a regular basis? And I'd like to understand from you too, with your experience, what that regular basis might be. Is it weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually? Yeah. What's that data?
So you're actually asking me three very important questions here, and let me deal with them sequentially. So first, the reason that I advocate having the head of cybersecurity on the directly reporting to the CEO is that we have weekly management meetings, and you want, in my opinion, you want part of that weekly management meeting to have a discussion about how you are protecting the company's assets. And I think it's really important that meeting also include a description of what the primary company assets are. For example, if I had been the CEO of Equifax, I would, without a question, would have said that, hey, the confidentiality of customer data or extended relationship data is absolutely critically important, and we have to do everything we can protect that. Let's build plans, monitor those plans, and have a weekly discussion about how we are doing putting those plans in place and what kind of events are we seeing and how are we protecting against those events. So from an awareness perspective, I believe that it needs to be part of the weekly management, the senior management meetings. Hmm. From a response perspective, I think that you need to break down the issue determination event into a time frame. I think the most important time frame is the first 30 minutes. And in that first 30 minutes, you want IT to be assessing what actually got reached by the breach. Was it software? Did someone put in a malware? What did it touch? Did they get data and take data out of your system? Did they grab credit card information somehow, and how did they do that? You know, there's a famous story about Target just a couple of years ago where they were hacked for millions of credit card numbers. And that hack happened in a millisecond where the credit card information was being transported electronically to a trusted second-party advisor. And in that little breach of a gap, there was a hack that got every single credit card number as it moved from one completely encrypted system to another completely encrypted system.
Now, thinking about security, and you brought up, you answered that question well. We need to be looking at the metrics on a weekly basis with the senior leadership team and adjusting the direction and the response accordingly in order to manage the risk. And I would say weekly is way more frequent than most companies are doing. What about a board level presentation and presenting data to the board? What does that look like, and how often should that occur from a CISO's standpoint, and then also from a CEO's standpoint?
Yeah, so board meetings are quarterly, so it's four times a year, obviously, and every single CEO and board should be in lockstep on identifying what the major digital disruption factors are for their company. And in that process, it obviously you're looking to not be Uberized, right? You're looking for things that could put you into Chapter 11. And one of those things that can seriously hurt you from a digital disruption perspective is cyber exposure. And so I believe that every quarter there should be a review of the cyber processes, methodologies, and tools that are being used to protect the company, and that the board should be fully aware of what I would call a company cyber status and understand what level of protection the company currently sits at and where it's going to. The reason I say that's important is obviously this is all about protecting shareholder value, whether it be public or private isn't the issue. But it's also about ensuring that the budgetary process and the hiring process at the senior level are in lockstep with these disruptive capabilities. You know, we saw, for example, in the Equifax chief security officer that this was an internal promotion with someone who wasn't fully trained on cyber. Mm-hmm. This woman's strength was in music, Now, I'm not saying that that mind is not the right kind of mind, but it wasn't the right training for that kind of mind. And this is something that a board should be looking at and saying, there's no way that we're going to approve that kind of hire or that kind of internal promotion.
That's a perfect segue into my next question. And that is, how do you view the CISO role, the Chief Information Security Officer role, changing over the course of time? Let's go back 10 years to, you know, the next 10 years. And I'll just add before you answer that question, I'll add most security people today have come up through the ranks of IT, and they are very technically focused. And as a result, we have some leadership in security that is also very technically focused. Do you believe that's the right skill set to bring to the knowledge appropriate to bring to the leadership team and the board?
Yeah, I do. I honestly believe that the security, the chief security officer, is a new specialty skill set that is both experienced and trained to manage these processes and these events. And I see that as, frankly speaking, I see that as another line of business. And I think that getting the best and brightest are critical to company success. And I further believe that the more skilled these people are, the more able they are to go from being technically oriented to being business and technically oriented. And I think that they will be able to give companies a leg up in the marketplace or a competitive advantage in designing the company's protection capabilities around their go-to-market strategies and around their value-add propositions. I, for one, would prefer to invest in a company that I knew had a very secure security perimeter.
So when you talk about business-oriented, we talked about the importance of having that technical experience to add context, because obviously cyber, the definition of it is all about digital, digital data, digital protection, digital risk. When you talk about the business, and how does a security leader then really align to the business? What does that look like? What are a few things they need to maybe add to their toolbox in order to do that effectively?
Yeah, I think it starts again with making sure that that security expert is part of the direct report to the CEO. And I think that every CEO needs to be looking at the business and looking at various disruptive factors that are going to hurt the business and then having in place formal plans. Mm-hmm. Now, a plan is not a silo view, right? So I want my security person working with my CFO to ensure that if I'm getting disruption, I absolutely understand different disruption events as it relates back to my P&L, as it relates back to my shareholder value. I want to respond to not to anthills like they're a mountain or vice versa. I want to know my specific plan, what my impacts are, and what I need to do to minimize my risk. If someone attacks me and demands $10 million and my loss of business is $50,000, I want to know that. And I want to know the reverse as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very important that the leading business officers, all of the C's, are working together on the business of security protection.
Great. Thank you for that. As we kind of move into our next chapter here, why don't you give us a little bit of background on what you're doing today? And I know your company is in stealth mode, but
sure.
What are you able to really talk about and what you're developing?
Yeah, Chad, before we get to that, I just want to add one other thing on cybersecurity. Okay. Here's what I think is happening in the marketplace today, particularly at the CEO and board level.
Yeah.
They're not invested enough in understanding what cybersecurity is and what a cyber attack event looks like. There is still in the marketplace this feeling that cyber attacks are the work of some pimply-faced kid sitting in mom's basement. What businesses need to understand today is that cyber attacks are organized crime. That if you were to walk into a company that was orchestrating a cyber attack, first thing you would say to yourself is, this is a company. There's a bunch of really smart people sitting in cubicles doing things that you cannot fathom how good they are at what they do and how that can affect your business. So we have to have that change of that look. The second thing is that your IT, your CISO person can't be seen as Paul Revere. In other words, you can't have a process and a system in place where they walk into your office and say, we just got hacked. You need to put them and yourself in a position, and I say, when I say you, the CEO, need to be in a position where when you get hacked and Paul Revere tells you you got hacked, you already have a well-trained, well-prepared, well-armed militia that can spring into battle with a winning plan. I personally would love to have been in the room when the Equifax breach happened. Wouldn't it have been great if they had called Wall Street and halted trading and then came out with a public announcement that said, we got hacked, we protected our data, we're not going to start trading until we've secured our system. Now, if in fact a hack occurred on Equifax, who lost $6 billion of market cap in 48 hours, if that hack had all been about some cybercrime company created a very large short because they had inside information on what was going to happen to Equifax, and they made $1 billion on a short because they hacked the company, wouldn't it be wonderful to have had that CEO halt the trade, reassure the marketplace, say that they weren't going to start trading until all was secure, and then the marketplace, on the day that the trading started again, jumped 15%, and you have a trap of a short that just lost billions of dollars. Wouldn't that be the best way to catch a cyber hacker?
That is brilliant. And you're bringing up something that not too many people are talking about. In fact, you are probably one of two people I've ever heard talk about the financial game that can be played as a result of these cyber attacks, these successful data breaches. And as a company CEO, you clearly come with that lens. But how do we determine if that really happens or if that is going on? Do you think we're going to learn that's going to get uncovered over a period of time? Maybe in 5 years we'll find out, or are we never going to learn that was part of the motive behind some of these data breaches, not just Equifax, but maybe some others?
Well, interestingly enough, I think you actually can figure this stuff out now. And that's why I like the idea of having a SWAT team in place. So in this particular instance, my view would be your CFO is sitting on that SWAT team. And the first thing that the CFO is doing is he's looking at Bloomberg or whatever access they have and looking on their site for trades, large blocks in the last 72 hours. And if I see a huge, large block short, the first thing I want to do is notify the SEC that I have been breached and that I am looking at a very large block. And I think the SEC can do an investigation right away. Because remember, everything is filed. Metadata exists. It's just whether or not you can think of these things in time. And the only way to think of these things in time is to pre-plan them.
Mm-hmm. This is so good that you're speaking about the business of security here. This truly is. Oftentimes, as people that, come up through the trenches in IT, which myself am one of those, way back in my career, it's very easy to lose sight of the fact that everybody on the payroll is there to either make the company money or save the company money.
And that's exactly it, Chad. And that's the way cyber needs to be treated today. Mm-hmm. Today, it is primarily preventing a company from losing money. But in the very near future, it will be like an ISO certification. And a company will be able to say that they've achieved a certain level of security certifications that investors and customers can value and feel good about their relationship with that company.
Yeah. So on that note, how much do companies know to invest? Because that's going to ultimately impact the bottom line. If we're continuing to invest in mitigated controls, training for the team, tool sets, then we have our cybersecurity insurance, our data breach insurance, and all of these other controls that I'm not even speaking about, mitigating factors, right, to prepare for the not if but when moment. and to mitigate that when moment as much as possible. How much do we know to invest? When do we know we've achieved a comfortable level of investment with regards to our cyber risk protection or our cybersecurity program?
Right. So at the macro level, every company goes through two formal planning sessions a year, giving a short-term 3-year and 5-year outlook, right? And so one of the things that I'm advocating is that you look at cyber as a whole, with detailed plans, obviously, as part of those outlooks. And again, I firmly recommend that every CEO and every board require their CEO to create a formal digital disruption view of their business with responding plans. And cyber needs to be a key element of digital disruption and responding plans. When you tie that into your formal planning process, there is a business case associated to every formal planning process. And to me, just like if I am missing something in my supply chain, if I get shorted on something, I can financially craft out the impact to my P&L. Cyber hacks are no different than that. What I do then is in my business case, I add up the cost of these potential threats, and that's how I justify my budget for ensuring that these threats don't happen. Additionally, I would want to be working with my insurance company and paying a specific premium to a writer that says that if I get hacked, I'm going to get covered to this level under business disruption.
All right, let's briefly return to our story about David. As David was seeking to understand his security program's current performance and thereby set appropriate priorities and expectations, he had to engage with team members and internal customers outside of the security team. So David launched an initial process assessment in TrustMap, aligned to his control framework and regulatory requirements. What David discovered was the ability to save time from previous efforts through the aggregation of multiple users' input and data points. So David leveraged TrustMap's analytics to tell a compelling story to executive leadership about the performance of the security program, investments required, and resources needed to achieve specified goals. The executive leadership and board of directors had the assumption that mobile security was an area already solved in the eyes of the leadership based on previous investment in a mobile device management system. However, based on the results of the program assessment in TrustMap, David could clearly articulate why mobile security was still underperforming to desired goals. In this case, it was the result of mobile application security and not device security. The analytics and planning intelligence from TrustMap supported David's story and allowed him to describe the estimated investments required and the difference between mobile device security and mobile application security to a non-technical audience. As a result, the leadership team acknowledged mobile application security as a priority, allocating funds to improve this area to achieve the desired maturity goals. TrustMap is for every leader who manages information security as a function of the business. And as a reminder, for listeners of this podcast, you should know that you can schedule a free trial of TrustMap. Go to trustmap.com/business. Now let's get back to the show.
You know, cyber insurance has been a very hot topic, and it continues to grow, and I think it's going to evolve over time as we get better data on the data breaches and the avenues in which they occur. Certain controls like awareness training, I know, is one where if you have a well-rounded and proven security awareness training program, you can get discounts on your cyber insurance. And I think there are other controls like that in the future. We'll start to see some benefits of performing those and investing in those where it will reduce some of the coverage amounts, some of the premium amounts for the cyber policies that companies are currently pursuing and purchasing today. On that topic, are you a fan of performance management? I know you are of the business side, but how do you view that with regards to cybersecurity?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked me that question. First of all, I am a fan of performance management for cybersecurity, and I do think that there should be a roadmap for the protection of the company that shows a sequential increase of protective capabilities. I also believe that those capabilities should be documented as a set of requirements. And when you choose a cyber protection company, whether it be FireEye or Palo Alto or any of the big players, you should be choosing them against your specific set of requirements and then roping them into formally into a performance process. You know, one of the things that I think needs to happen when an event occurs, I think that the providing company that you have engaged with should be with you publicly and telling the market on your behalf what they've done to plug the gaps after a breach. I see this as not as an arm's length relationship, but as a hand-in-hand relationship.
Mm-hmm. What about that relationship in pre-breach mode? How does that look today, or how should it look in the future, rather?
Well, I really believe that the CISO or whoever it may be that's got the responsibility for cyber is a direct report to the CEO. Mm-hmm. And I think that they should have a roadmap and a set of requirements that they're presenting, that they're getting funded, that the CEO signs off on, that the CFO signs off on, just like marketing does when it rolls out a new product. And there is a time frame and there is a Gantt chart and it shows everybody what's happening, when it's going to happen, and then you need to measure it and you need to test it and you need to get responses to it.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification, Charlie. Appreciate it. Could you give us a little background on your endeavor you're working on? And you identified an opportunity in the marketplace that sounds very interesting. And I know you can't give a lot of information because you are in stealth mode yet, but I do want you to share a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So the name of our company is Vault Data. We're currently an LLC. We are a cognitive software developer, and we're getting ready to release something that the market has not seen before. We have taken a view that artificial intelligence is sort of at the crash dummy stage, and that cognitive software is really where the value comes in when we think about artificial intelligence generically. And so we have built a cognitive software platform that the market currently does not have, and we think it's going to be gangbusters for our potential clients.
Can you give us where it might play in the protection zones? Is it a perimeter defense? Is it a backup defense? Is it a response defense? Kind of looking at it from a NIST CSF, right? Identify, protect, defend, respond.
Well, to be honest with you, Chad, I hate to tell you this, but it's not going to be in the security world. It's in a different industry.
Interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about what is cognitive technology for, you know, cognitive technology for dummies? Because I am just scratching the surface on this subject and learning more about it.
Sure. So it's perhaps one of the most misunderstood acronyms of today, along with digital transformation. So artificial intelligence is essentially taking known databases and loading the interfaces and the data within those databases into an interactive system. So today we think about telling Siri to turn on the lights, and Siri turns on the lights in your house. And it's because your network is tied to Siri, and Siri knows where the lights are, and you have that capability. Cognitive is deep learning software. It basically learns to think like you. And it takes your brain and it almost gives it that genius pill, if you will. It takes your brain, it puts you out into the cyber world, and it makes you move faster and smarter and be able to identify things with greater clarity. So the analogy I like to use today is that if I take a crash dummy that we see on commercials and car tests, and I slam a car into a wall, that crash dummy is wired with all kinds of sensors, and it tells us everything we need to know about a crash. But I can't stick that crash dummy in a car and say, let's head over to Starbucks, take the next left. Cognitive software will have that ability. And that's the true difference between AI and cognitive, in my opinion.
Is it fair to say that the Siri tool that Apple has on their phones and now their laptops is a very infant version of cognitive software?
You know, I would imagine, I don't know for sure, but I would say that Apple would say that what they have today compared to what they're going to have tomorrow will be light years difference.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are investing into artificial intelligence slash the migration into cognitive software heavily. And the marketplace is not up to speed on the difference of the two. We have this nomenclature out there that says, hey, it's artificial intelligence, and everybody wants that. The beauty is that cognitive is valuable and artificial intelligence is still limited.
Interesting. Where do you see the future of technology going holistically here? And if you were to predict in 5 years and then give us maybe 10 years out?
Well, you know, the first thing I see is that one of the things that technology is doing sort of in its own stealth mode is it is rejuvenating our workforce. I do not see technology as a threat. I see it as an enhancer. So, for example, in my company, my fellow employees, Patriots, are all over 50 years old. And they've got 30 years worth of experience that took me about a weekend to get them up to speed on technology. And so with this advancement of technology, people with great business experience have far more value than the traditional people with technology experience trying to learn about business. So that's the first big enhancement value that I see in technology is that the more experience you have in this new digital era, the more valuable you are. The next thing that I see is that the digital world is already a connected world. And when we look at connectivity, what we get is the opportunity for success that's never been had before. So a small company, an example, Uber just starting out, is able to disrupt an entire taxi industry worldwide. The idea that such a small David could go after such a Goliath of an entire industry so quickly and so successfully is because of technology and the pervasiveness of digital. So I see enhanced skill sets, putting value back on business and off of technology as the mainstay, and I see unlimited access for opportunity, not just on a national basis, but a global basis.
What do you think the next industry that is ripe for disruption is?
Oh, boy. Here's the thing. Every single industry is ripe for disruption. Every single industry and every company within industry has somebody somewhere working to develop a new application, a new platform, a new methodology that will completely change an industry and that will wipe out large companies. The small companies of the world today are the nimble, quick. They have every strategic advantage because they don't have the cost structure of a large company. And development code today and development platforms are far more robust than they were just 5 years ago. Everything in the world today is in the cloud. You can take pieces and components of development architecture and license it for peanuts. You no longer need to buy servers to develop platforms. You can just use cloud resources. So your CapEx is not a big deal anymore. You do not need to have employees in one place because of the multiple communications and sharing communications capabilities. Small companies are going to have their day, and it's going to come through digital transformation.
What do you think the horizon is when you say small companies are going to have their day? Is that in 2 years? Is it in five? Is it in 8, 10, 12?
Well, I think it's an exponential thing. I think you're starting to see it today. And we see that the millennials that are coming out of college now are less interested in joining the big companies and more interested in joining not startups, but smaller companies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sort of seeing this spring now where literally just 5 to 10 years ago that people came out of the best colleges and only wanted to do startups. Silicon Valley, Austin, the Iron District in Manhattan, the Boston area, all of that got the hot kids coming out of school. Now, we're starting to see some people get back into the bigger companies, but we're seeing more kids go into the SMBs and the smaller end of the SMBs.
And that's where historically the best innovation and disruption comes from.
You know, there is a certain level where it's hard to turn a battleship. And when you are so dependent on a very large revenue source to cover a very large cost source, it's very hard to shift those mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So I see the lower end of SMB really being where the power is to transform digitally in the face of disruption. Mm-hmm. I still see the market as a bunch of unicorn opportunities. Who knows where the next one's going to come from? I'm hoping Vault Data will be a unicorn.
When do you plan to launch Vault Data? Do you have a date set?
I think my head of development would have a heart attack if I gave that information out.
Fair enough. I can relate. Well, Charlie, it's been an absolute pleasure. If people want to get in contact with you, would you mind sharing any Twitter handle information or LinkedIn contact information?
Sure. So I am at Langdon Charlie, and I am on LinkedIn as Charlie Langdon.
All right. Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and insight. This has been extremely valuable, and wish you all the best with Vault Data. And we'll be speaking again soon.
Thanks, Chad. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Business of Security podcast. A special thanks to today's guest, Charlie Langdon, CEO of Vault Data. Our host today was Chad Beckman, founder and CEO of Secure Digital Solutions. You can connect with Chad on LinkedIn and learn more about Secure Digital Solutions at trustsds.com. Our show was produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire Films at livewirefilms.com. Check out our next podcast episode with Lauren Mahler, president of Dealer Mahler Strategies. The topic is communicating in a crisis. You've been listening to the Business of Security podcast, and that's a wrap.